Hello, and welcome to the Sheldrake Vernon Dialogues with myself, Mark Vernon, and Rupert Sheldrake. Hi, Rupert.
Hello, Mark.
These are conversations which we have. They're quite spontaneous. We've just decided what we're going to talk about now. And the idea is that as we think of ideas, so too it fosters ideas in people who are listening, and that it might even promote conversations yourselves, or at least sharing our conversation to sort of open up the subjects concerned. And what we just decided on was to talk about pilgrimage. So this is forming an intention to walk to a place, arriving at the place, and en route or there, seeing what you experience, seeing what unfolds. And it's become a huge phenomenon, actually. I mean, the Santiago de Compostela pilgrimage has been building in recent years for quite some time. It's talked about in mainstream media. And in this country, in particular, the British Pilgrimage Trust, which is an organisation we both know of well, and Will and Guy, who run it, they're finding a tremendous uptake in interest in wanting to rediscover the local pilgrimages in the UK where we are. And in fact, I think the reason why the subject came to mind is that Rupert and I just went on a pilgrimage with the British Pilgrimage Trust through London last Sunday, and it was amazing. It's really tremendous.
Yes.
And then the other thing is you've written about this in your new book as well, on spiritual practices.
In Science and Spiritual Practices, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, what led you to feel that it's a key thing to include in that book?
Well, it's clearly a spiritual practice that's found everywhere in the world. And we find pilgrimage everywhere. Muslims have them to Mecca, of course, and to Jerusalem, the Dome of the Rock, and to Sufi shrines in India and elsewhere. Hindus have lots of pilgrimages to holy rivers like the Ganges, to mountains like Kailash, to sacred caves, and of course to temples. We find them in every tradition. You know, the Jewish people have pilgrimages to Jerusalem. Christians have pilgrimages to all sorts of places, Santiago de Compostela, the Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe in Mexico, countless other places. And I think that this is a fundamental aspect of human nature. I think it's rooted in our history as hunter-gatherers. Hunter-gatherers are nomadic. They have to move around the landscape. They can't just sit in one place and hope that fruit drops into their lap or that animals come and sort of drop dead at their feet. They have to move around to follow the animals they hunt and to gather the things they gather. And traditionally, what they do is move through the landscape in a kind of circuit in accordance with the seasons. And each of the significant places along the route has a story. The Australian Aborigines call these song lines. They sing the story. And I think what happens when people settle down with the growth of agriculture, this ancient pattern of going to places with stories persisted. And so we found in early agricultural civilizations, like in England, Stonehenge became a ceremonial center. It wasn't a temple in the middle of a city. There were no cities. But people converged there for festivals, mainly at solstices, as far as we can tell. And that was a kind of pilgrimage, going to the place for the festival. Then many others grew up in Christian Europe with shrines of saints, relics of saints, cathedrals, which were built around relics of saints. I think it's a very ancient pattern. I wrote about it in my book, Science and Spiritual Practices, because I was looking at practices that are common to all religions and which you can also do if you're not part of a religion, and pilgrimage fits the bill perfectly. It's also undergoing this astonishing revival in Europe at the moment. As Santiago, last year there were about 300,000 people walked there, and in 1987, when the pilgrimage was first revived in its modern form, it was about 1,000. Then there's been a similar opening up of pilgrimage routes all over Europe, including Trondheim in Norway, the Shrine of St. Olaf, a pilgrimage from Oslo to Trondheim through the mountains. I don't know how long it takes, a week or something. Mm-hmm. So I think this is a big thing going on at the moment, and I think it's particularly important in the modern world. And one aspect that I think is important is the way that in countries like England, where there was a Protestant Reformation, pilgrimage was suppressed in England in 1538 and in other Protestant countries. And then, deprived of this ancient pattern of going to holy places, which attracted pilgrims, the English, within a few generations, had invented tourism. And so I think tourism is best seen as a form of frustrated pilgrimage. Tourists go to the ancient sacred places but can't offer a prayer or make an offering or ask for a blessing because they have to pretend they're there out of an interest in historical facts. And I think what can happen now is a paradigm shift back from tourism to pilgrimage, and I think that's one of the things that's going on at the moment.
Yeah, that deep history really resonates with a key interest for me, which is the way that human consciousness has evolved as well. I mean, it's just another version of saying what you're saying. But the idea that the experience of what it was to be human feels very different in the deep past, a few millennia ago, say. And I think that one of the things which you can see in, say, the earliest bits of the Old Testament in the Bible, or indeed in other cultures that reach back to these times, is how place was charged with gods. Deities were thought to exist in places.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this was a very direct experience, that, as it were, someone with that perception would know where they were, not just because the hills looked a certain shape or the river was flowing in the way it was, but because certain deities or spirits, certain entities, would make themselves known.
Mm.
You pick this up in the Psalms, say, where people talk about Mount Zion and God being in Mount Zion, and that when the Israelites step out, Mount Zion goes with them, or streams and rivers fight on their side. It's in Homer's Iliad as well. Achilles at one point has to fight the various gods of places. It's in ancient Egyptian stories as well about battles. So that sense that the places have a kind of inner life, an inner vitality that's talked about in terms of gods and spirits, as well as ourselves. And that when you walk a geography, you also walk a psychogeography and encounter different feelings. That too is very much what pilgrimage is like. I mean, it's when you're used to going from A to B in a car or in some sort of fast transit, it's really very remarkable to walk even quite a short distance across, say, a landscape or even through a city and realise that you turn a corner and there's a very, very different feel to a place. It's like a whole new world sort of pops up before you. And it feels very liberating and exciting to kind of experience that once more. You know, kind of as you're saying with the revival, I think.
Well, I think the association of memories with places is again, very, very fundamental. I mean, in animals, all animals that move around have to remember places. They have to remember where to find food, how to get home, which places might be dangerous. So although they can't tell actual stories like humans can tell about places, there's the association of memories with places. And the part of the brain that's involved in the formation of memories, the hippocampus, even has areas called place cells, which respond to different places. You know, in London, taxi drivers, when they learn the knowledge, 25,000 streets, actually undergo a measurable increase in the size of their posterior hippocampus. The association of memory and place is very, very deep. And the point about holy places, which are the destinations of pilgrimages, is partly the stories that are told there and partly the experience that people have there. I mean, sometimes these stories, the place is special because of a story. Somebody was killed there, his bones were deposited there or buried there or something. But sometimes the place clearly has a power of its own, like a mountaintop or a spring or a waterfall or a powerful river or a confluence of rivers, which in India is always a very sacred place.
Yeah, I mean, I think that awareness of what you might call the influence, which originally meant the inflow, or understanding a place, which you know, implicitly understanding a place which originally meant standing under. You know, these words carry that way of engaging with things. And I was very aware when we were on the pilgrimage last Sunday about what opens up for you if you make an invocation in a place too. Just uttering, you know, maybe a very simple prayer or lighting a candle, even just standing before a stone or a statue. It turns your inner life outward for a moment and enables you to experience things.
Yes.
And I was very struck, you know, one of the things which we were encouraged to do was not just go into churches, for example, if they were open, but to stand against the walls of churches, perhaps particularly at the east end or on the south side, and put a hand on the wall, put a forehead on the wall, and just try and perceive, you know, what that gave you. And it was quite remarkable how different churches have quite different feels.
Yes.
You know, St. Paul's Cathedral has, you know, a massive feel. It feels overwhelming, actually, yes, to do that. Whereas one of the more intimate Wren churches, for me, felt like almost like a hidden place that was like a sort of portal that could open up for you.
Yes.
So it's very striking how just quite a simple gesture opens up a radically new way of engaging with what's round and about, that as otherwise, you know, really quite forgotten or even forbidden. Just picking up on your bit of history there, when the pilgrimage was actually banned, and I wonder whether that has much to do with this at that time in the 16th century, when inner life was starting to become really quite suspect. You know, figures on the continent, certainly like Luther and Calvin, became very, very suspicious of human inner life, feeling it could be invaded by all sorts of malign influences and forces. And so they turned to more external ways of engaging with the divine, notably the Bible. And then this sort of gradual increase of the sense that the objective is what delivers the truth clearly gets taken up in modern science. But the subjective, which originally had meant knowing something from within itself, knowing it directly, you might say, gets rather lost. And so, strangely, pilgrimage kind of opens that up again, too.
Well, I think it does. And you see, the other thing that happened in the beginning of modern science in the 17th century is really getting rid of the idea of place and replacing it with the idea of space. Before, place has a characteristic. It's shaped by its environment. It has a quality of its own. Whereas space, as in a Cartesian graph, is just a uniform linear dimension, and you can, like, map coordinates. You know, it's absolutely neutral. Each place can have a number assigned to it as a map coordinates, survey grid coordinate, which is a purely mathematical thing which has no quality to it. And you can actually see how this influences landscape, because here in Europe, where landscapes were settled a long time ago, boundaries were things like rivers and streams, and boundary markers were big trees or rocks. And the shape of field boundaries and things, it sort of wiggles around, it's related to the landscape. But when the United States was colonized, I mean the western part of it, it was already under the influence of this kind of Enlightenment rationalism, where place had a significance for the Native Americans, but they had no significance for the conquering whites, Europeans who settled there. And they simply imposed a Cartesian grid on the landscape that was divided up into uniform squares. So when you fly over the United States and you look down, there's all these squares, and they're basically mile squares oriented north, south, east, and west. They're then subdivided into squares. And so there's and they crash into rivers and mountainsides and stuff. It's a man-made imposition onto a landscape, and shows this totally different spirit of space divided rationally and mathematically as opposed to place.
Yeah, I mean, I do wonder whether the modern city, with its desire for more and more spaces, you know, in high-rise blocks, in buildings that have clearly been designed by the manipulation of a Cartesian way of thinking. You know, a lot of modern buildings do look like someone kind of pressed go on a computer,
yes,
and out came this sort of impossible shape, but you can sort of, you feel its mathematical quality. And of course, they also, these buildings feel very utilitarian. There's just a sense that they were put up one day, and if you walked around the corner the next, then they somehow weren't there because they'd be pulled down again. Mm. Well, you sort of wouldn't be surprised. Mm. They come and go, these spaces. I do wonder whether that felt quality, which is rather disconnected, alienating, even disorientating, has quite a big bearing upon people's mental health. Actually,
yes.
Feeling connected to a place so that it gives you something, and it works with the lie of the land. It reveals things to you. It feels like it gives you something rather than just provide you a space in which to do what you've got to do. It's got a much more sort of being quality. Again, you know, I wonder whether pilgrimage is picking back up on that, and people who go on Santiago walks and so on will say, you know, it restored me to my mental health. You know, in a way, why are we surprised?
Well, exactly. I mean, pilgrimage is something people can undertake for a variety of reasons, you know, to give thanks, to ask for healing, to seek for vision, to find a new purpose in life in times of transition. And in all these cases, I think connecting with places in the way that's most direct and intimate for us, walking between them on foot, is incredibly therapeutic. I also think that when we can actually use these principles when we go to new places, one way is to go on a pilgrimage where you have a destination which is a pilgrimage destination. The other way is to turn journeys that one's going on anyway into pilgrimages. And I've found what works for me is it's an astonishing way, actually, is when I go on a journey, I have to go somewhere for a meeting or to give a talk or whatever. If it's in India, for example, I try and go first as soon as I can to the central temple in the place, because that's the sacred heart of the place, linked to the sacred heart of the place first as a way of relating to the place. In Europe, I go to, in the city, to cathedrals, and there are wonderful ones everywhere. I mean, in New York, marvellous cathedrals, St. John the Divine, St. Patrick's. In San Francisco, Grace Cathedral. And in Europe, of course, these great cathedrals like Lincoln and Westminster Abbey here in London and St. Paul's. And so I find that by going, or in a village or a town, to the parish church, they're usually open, Catholic or Anglican ones. And by going there soon after I arrive, lighting a candle, asking for blessings on my journey and time there, and the people I meet and what happens in that place, completely transforms the experience of going to places by turning it into an experience that has a dimension, a connection with the history, the heart of the place.
Yeah.
It's amazing how effective this is, and it's terribly simple and easy to do.
It really is a try it out and test, you know, taste and see. I mean, the other element which comes together, which comes to my mind when you say that as well, is about being to what you don't know in a place. It's kind of stepping into something that is not known, but you sort of trust, you know, to step into a temple, to step into a church, and I think that pilgrimage does that really well too. People will say they go on a pilgrimage, they're not quite sure why, they have an intention perhaps, but they're opening up to a side of themselves which is more than themselves, which is kind of beyond themselves.
Yes.
And that too is, you know, is immensely therapeutic, but also expansive of the soul, to maybe even undergo some suffering and difficulty, you know, to be exposed to the weather, to feel uncomfortable with walking. There's something about almost engaging that doubt, you might say. It takes you to an edge of your own awareness, a sort of horizon.
Yes.
But when it's contained in a walk, you know, that does have a beginning, a middle and an end, and perhaps is supported by other pilgrims or by the rituals that you go along on the way, that enables you to open up and to be receptive to what's around and about. That's there already, but you wouldn't have even noticed if you hadn't made these gestures.
I agree, and I think another thing one can do is find make pilgrimages on particularly important times. I mean, like birthdays. I mean, for the last 5 years, as you know, I've been going with I have a godson, a teenage godson, and every year for his birthday in June, we go on a pilgrimage together, walking 7 or 8 miles to a cathedral. We started with Canterbury, and then we went to Ely, and then Lincoln and Wells, and last year it was Winchester. So we walk through the countryside. We stop at significant places. In Winchester, there's a marvellous labyrinth on the top of St. Catherine's Hill, so we walk this ancient labyrinth as part of our pilgrimage. We end up at the cathedral. We have tea when we get there, and we go to choral evensong, this wonderful sung service in the evening. It's marvellously satisfying thing to do together. And my wife Jill and I sometimes on our wedding anniversary, we always try and go to a cathedral or a holy place on our wedding anniversary for choral evensong, to light candles and to ask for a blessing. And we've done that to Canterbury, and we've done it. We didn't walk to Canterbury, we only walked the last bit, we took the train. But the just going there for these special occasions is just amazing. And what I've found is that if one asks for a blessing, after the evensong service, we ask the priest or the dean or whoever's taking the service, we say it's our wedding anniversary, could you give us a blessing? That no one's ever refused, and we've had the most wonderful blessings that really feel like a blessing. That this happens, it doesn't have to be in a Christian context only. I mean, here in Europe, that's where the cathedrals, churches, and Christian blessings are the most readily available. When I've been in India with Jill and others, you know, we've been to temples and done pujas, made offerings, and asked for blessings, and received blessings. So it's a wonderful thing to be able to ask for a blessing in a holy place, and it's much easier to do than most people imagine.
Yes, and that simplicity, again, if Guy or Will were here from the British Pilgrimage Trust, they'd be saying it can be immensely simple. It can be as simple as appreciating and walking up to, with intention, to say, a great tree in the park, or you can just open your map and find the local standing stone or stone circle, which again, in countries like the UK, there are loads of them, actually.
Yes.
Very simple first steps that may eventually lead to, you know, weeks and weeks, who knows, walking across northern Spain to Santiago de Compostela. But thanks very much, Rupert. That's tremendous. It was wonderful doing the pilgrimage last Sunday, and we'll do them again. It's really inspiring.
It was such a simple thing to do, and it was so uplifting. I've just felt, you know, buoyed up by that, and the whole day was, everyone on it actually ended up looking really enlivened with sparkling eyes. And
yeah, and it carries on, because you feel like you live in your town or city with an awareness of its inner life, a kind of new intimacy with it as well. So it carries on a long time afterwards.
This was one of the first times I've done an urban pilgrimage, and actually it makes me think this is something I'd like to do in other places too, in other cities, and including New York would be a great place for this. There's some wonderful places to do it in. So I think it's a simple template that one can apply in lots of places, this basic principle.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.